This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is, I don't even know, episode three? Is this episode three of the spring session or four?
We might be on four, I think.
And time flies when you're having fun. Mr. Pierce Nellis, how are we doing, dude?
Excellent, man. Happy to be back here.
Yes. Okay. Week recap. How was your last week? Tell me what you've been doing.
Oh, dude, it's been good. I got almost no sleep. Still trying to fill my last couple of my last Iowa turkey tag and then my last Wisconsin turkey tag. Yeah. I filled the Iowa tag on a very dumb Jake and struggled in Wisconsin yesterday. I'm recording this Monday, the 18th. So on Sunday, we got in them. We had birds all over the place, roosted right above us, and rolled the dice on setting up in the bottom, and they all went up to the top, and that was that.
Love it. Yep. It's funny how, you know, so I also host the How to Hunt Turkey podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you got these guys out there who are like, dude, I'm going to go all day. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get these birds. And then you got other guys who are just like, dude, if they start walking away from me in the mornings and they go the opposite direction, I'm just not good enough to go and A, I don't have the patience to wait them out, and B, I'm not good enough to go flank them or sit there and wait until the toms get, you know that they're not going to breed any of these hens, and then they kind of come off the hens and then they go look for something else. Like, I go looking for other birds, and if I don't find other birds, then I go eat some breakfast somewhere, and then that's the day, really.
Yeah. Dude, absolutely. I saw a clip you posted on How to Hunt Turkey about the guy mentioning that comment of like, I don't like deer hunting for turkeys. And that's a phrase that lives rent free in my head all spring long. Because I'm like, you know what? It's been 15 minutes. These birds ain't coming. Screw it. And then I get up and I bump them as they're skirting down the field edge towards me or something. And I don't know. But that was, I will say, patience is what killed my turkey in Iowa on Friday. I slowed the whole thing down because I'd bumped so many dang birds in Wisconsin leading up to that point that I was like, you know what, dude, you need to chill out and just listen to the birds, develop a thoughtful game plan. Don't just start running in there and end up paying off.
And what did that Jake tell you when you started listening?
He didn't tell me shit. Okay. The tom that was in that flock, I didn't know the Jake was there. I thought, to my knowledge, there was one tom that was just hammering, and then there was another one that was on private just along the border. They're kind of set up on this one big finger that led down basically at the top of this big valley. And I set up where I'd seen some hens the day before, kind of in this big sort of a open timber setting right across the valley from that. Where that bird is roosted, and called back and forth with those two for what felt like forever. It's probably like an hour. And then I finally thought, you know what? I don't like, it is kind of a long ask to have, he's going to have to fly over this really deep dried up creek bottom, and he's level with me right now. But if I just run down this, I guess, knob here, drop down at the foot of that spine that he's on, and then come up from the bottom, maybe I can loop around and get up above him there. And so I tried doing that, and then set up, called, didn't hear anything. So I was like, I really hope he didn't just go up to the field, but we'll see. And then I didn't feel good in the tree that I was in because it was kind of at the bottom. Like, I knew any bird that came in, he was going to have basically an open stage to look down at everything below him, and he was just going to see my ugly face with a gun looking right back at him. So then I stood up, started walking up the hill, and I was like, I'm going to drop over the other side of this little spine and then try and loop around below and then pop up right above where I think that bird was. And as I dropped over the other side, I see a hen at about 30 yards in fairly open timber, and she sees me, and I'd like taken a step. I froze. My like legs are crossed. I'm holding my shotgun like at my waist, like Elmer Fudd. And this hen starts putting at me. I start putting back at her. So then she starts second guessing what's going on and sort of lingers, sort of hangs out, but eventually sort of like filters off. Another hen comes up. She does the same thing. And then I see a bright red head and a quarter strut body. So I'm like, all right, that's my guy. It's on. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of dark, canopied timber and everything. So I mm-hmm. couldn't see exactly what this bird was, but knew if he was strutting and walking around, behaving much like a tom, I figured that's my guy. What the heck? And so yeah. then he was going to come towards me and then luckily stopped because I was about to just have to pull up on him. But regardless, as soon as he started to like back up and go the other way, I pulled my gun up and he happened to freeze with his head right behind this maybe like 10-inch little sapling. And then as he did that, I shouldered my gun. And then he kind of like knew something just happened, but he didn't quite know what. Took another step, putted, and I rocked him. And yeah. so it was a nice little natural selection bird there.
I'll tell you what, man. Make no mistake about what I'm about to say. I will shoot a Jake in the mm-hmm. face. Like, there's nothing in my DNA that says toms only, yep. right? It's not like deer hunting. I will crush a Jake opening morning with 5 minutes into the season. Like I'm shooting Jakes, dude. I don't care. Yep. I'll shoot a Jake. Some people would be like, oh, how dare you? Like, how dare you shoot a Jake? I'm shooting Jakes, dude. That's a t-shirt. I shoot Jakes.
I like that, dude. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, I never had an issue with it because, you know, we're out there. It's a legal bird. Why mm-hmm. not? Like, right. shoot the dang thing. It's not right. like, yeah, it's not like we're trying to raise that one or
that pick older out age that class. One time.
Yeah, yeah, right. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, cool, man. So we talked a little bit about it on a previous episode, but, We got rain in the forecast, and yep. that's going to affect how your fly fishing operation kind of goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We got dumped on up in Wisconsin on Friday night, mm-hmm. way more than we were expected to. And so I grabbed my clients, drove down, and I was like, oh shit, this is chocolate milk. We're going to hop over to the next valley. And so did that and had honestly a ridiculous day. My first couple of like doubles where they're both hooked up in the same spot. And I'm like netting one fish, like basically ripping the hook out of it and running up so that I can net the other guy's fish and all that. So that was pretty cool. We had a couple of double fish in the net moments there.
Yeah.
But nice light stain. So the trout were super happy and water levels got a nice little bump, flushed a bunch of food into the system. And yeah, it was good.
I like how you talk about fly fishing, like, oh, no, little bumps, you know, chocolate milk. You got a little bit of this. it's almost like you're like, I don't know, like sometimes listening to fly fishermen talk about how they fly fish makes me think that they are on weed a lot throughout the day. It's like, it's almost like a skateboarder where it's like totally gnarly, dude.
Yeah, you know, a little like some bit.
So, definitely
similar terminology there for sure.
Yeah, for dude, sure. I was rocking right up on this, yo. He had to be like a 14-incher, bro, and I laid it right out for him. Oh.
That is like a quintessential, dude. That was a perfect driftless trout fisherman's impersonation. He was all a 14, dude. Yeah. He was a monster.
And I laid it right out there. I rolled it right out there and he took it and my line went straight, bro.
Yep.
Love it. Love it. Have you,
I wish deer hunters talked like that.
Oh yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Well, that'd be bad. I think, I don't think like, I don't know why, but like deer hunters, obviously when you talk about a deer hunter in the South, you just throw the most like I don't even know how to do it. It's just like, yeah, I seen him right there down there by that crossing, right? Like he was coming up. I don't know why a Southern deer hunter just sounds real squeaky, maybe mm-hmm. a little squeaky.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, yeah, we were in that pine thicket way over there and oh man, he showed up and next thing I know, I was drawing back full draw on him. He came out. And next thing you know, he's double lung
he's double lung. He fell over dead in the doornail. Next thing you know, I was calling my buddy Bubba up, and Bubba said, "Bubba, we got a drag, bud." And he's like, "All right, oh, here I come." You know,
yeah.
That's my impersonation of a Southern bow hunter.
That some dumb. Bitch was 95 inches.
Yeah, not dumb, not dumb sounding, right? But like, just that's what it sounds like. That's what a Southern deer hunter. And then, dude, I do know a couple guys in the podcast game who talked like what you were saying, but they kind of had a crossover. They were a little more trad. Like okay, they did some trad stuff too, which if you're a trad bow hunter, maybe you can talk like that. But like if I started talking like, dude, totally gnarly, man, I stepped up in that tree stand and I heard him coming, man. And you would be like, dude, I'm never going to listen to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast again. Yeah. What a douchebag. Right? What a douchebag.
Dude, okay. Is there a demographic of whitetail hunters that you think is like the most in that demographic?
So stereotypes?
The most, like clean and tidy, like perfectly buttoned up, you know, like real present, you know, like this deer, thermals were doing this and this deer came
in.
Oh,
yeah. You know, okay, I get
like,
you.
Almost like the documentary host, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's gotta be probably your saddle hunter-ish, public land, proud type guys.
Yeah.
Where they go in and they're like, well, the reason I picked this stand today was because, it almost sounds like an NPR breakdown. Of course, they're filming themselves hunt, right?
Yep.
As well. So it's like, yeah, the reason I stepped into this because I had great water access to the north. The water was low, so I didn't need rubber boots. So I just kind of walked the bank, and thermals were hitting extremely hard today. So I knew that the sun was going to be on this south-facing slope. And the next thing you know, the big buck showed up. It was the one I've been looking for because I was able to taste the rubs, and I knew it was him. And, you know, just like completely.
Norepinephrine on the bark was just oozing out of there, and I caught a whiff of it. I knew it had to be a three-year-old deer or better based off of the pheromones from this tree.
His preorbital scent was wafting majorly in the woods. And I knew he was in here, and I knew he was in here, and I had to make a move, and I knew it was today, and I knew it was today. Yep. That would be your hardcore public land saddle. Like those guys, they may not even wear camo. They may wear wool type guys, maybe.
Flannels. Yep.
I'm trying to break apart the guys who wear flannel and the guys who wear like the matching perfect layer Sitka or First Light. You know what I mean? Like the manicured look, like they look like they're, I'll be honest. Like when I go into the woods, I don't look like I could be on the cover of a catalog or in a magazine or like on a digital ad anywhere. I look like the one year I was like counting the camo that I was wearing five different camo brands. I didn't look like shit. I looked like some guy who stole a whole bunch of camo from different people, and that's what he was wearing that day. So,
dude, I feel like we reach a point in those two classes where it's like you almost go so far in the opposite direction that you come back.
You
and
come
you're
back
like,
to it.
Yeah, it's gone full circle. And they
so what is the thing that brings them back together?
Well, as you were describing like that sort of narration of a hunt and a situation and like a layout and stuff like that, it's very, very similar, I feel like, to a lot of like YouTube hunters who also have access to like primo private ground. And like it's you reach a point where
you're right.
You're using maybe trad equipment and the other guy's using a crossbow, perhaps, but it's like you're coming. It's all, and I think this is more reflected in like the production value of what's going on, and like like how detailed of a story you're trying to tell, and how deadly serious it is. But I think you reach a point, where we start to come all the way full circle, and we're just standing there back to back, looking at the same exact thing, and doing things the exact same. I don't know. It's weird.
I don't know.
I don't like folks hunting themselves into a box. Yeah. You know, I think we are all better than that. We deserve, we owe it to ourselves to just loosen up a little bit more.
A little bit, yeah.
Right? Like, okay. Let's not try and all be the next
Andy May.
Meat eater host, or yeah. Andy, or whatever it is, yeah. Right? Yeah, yep. It's,
yep.
I don't know.
Oh, okay, I know what you're saying. Not Andy May. You're talking about, like, trying to be the guy, the face yes. of bow hunting, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, I gotcha, yeah. I will say this, like, imagine like listening to a video but not watching the what is on, and you're just getting like jacked up about it, right? And I don't know what, like, this is probably why I don't have any major partners with any camo brands, or like I'm not bigger than what I am, because imagine listening to something and then turning around and looking at it, and it's a guy in a ladder stand holding a crossbow with, like, just looking fresh and clean, and he's got the matching camo on over top of a food plot. Like, you instantly see that, and doesn't your, like, I don't know about you, but, like, when I see that, I go, I'm not necessarily as interested as that, as some guy going to saying the same exact thing, and he's in a saddle, or he's on some, like, run and gun tree stand, mm-hmm. Back in just, like, you gnarly timber, and you find out it's public, and he's back there, or he's had to walk through cattle pastures and other guys to get to the spot, and you look at it, and then, like, the story becomes interesting based off of what it looks like versus what it's like. I don't know, like, I'm all about the story, right? And mm-hmm. we've talked about totally. This before, but for some reason, the manicured property, like, I planted 100 acres of food plots type, like, I cut out, you know, all these invasive species. Okay, cool. The work is great. But, like, dude, it just doesn't interest me at this point in my life.
Right. Absolutely.
And maybe it's because I don't own land.
Right. I was just about to say that. I think it resonates a lot harder with the guys who are, you know, basically hobby farmers on their properties and throw in these food plots and do all this different stuff. And because it's like it's the same amount of care for the public land guy in the saddle who's out there scouting, no trail cams, doing all that stuff. It's the same amount of care and, like, focus and attention to detail as the guys who are doing all that stuff and, like, maybe over obsessively. Mm-hmm. And I think one can look at the other very easily and say, like, oh, yeah, if I did that too, then it'd be, you know, I'd have the same degree of success. But both of them care about it the same exact amount. They're both as meticulous when it comes to, like, yeah, that private land guy with the box blind or the ladder stand or whatever, like, he still knows exactly what the wind needs to be doing for that property and when that deer is going to show up. And it's like the analysis of the trail camera data or whatever it may be is so high and on another level. And we've definitely kind of poo-pooed that as, you know, being more of like a pay-to-play type option type thing. If you can, you know, run surveillance on a whole property and be able to sit on your iPad or, you know, bring your whatever's in your box blind and wait for that buck to watch or walk out, we all look at it and we're like, well, that's easy. If I could do that too, like, I'd have just as much success. But it's still a time commitment. It's still, like, I would imagine, like, sucks just as much as having to do, like, the legwork of boots on the ground scouting everything throughout a season, or the postseason scouting, or in season, or whatever it may be, or having those encounters. And I don't know.
Yeah,
I think the time commitments are still there for both of them, just in much different ways.
Yeah, this is crazy. Like, I 100% support trail cameras. I use cell cams. I love cell cams. But I was talking to a guy. What was it? At the beginning of this past season, and I just kind of was in passing. I was like, you know, I think we ended up, and he was telling me, I just had a good deer show up on cell cam. I'm like, out of curiosity, on your 220 acres, how many cell cams are you running? He's like, 35.
Oh my God.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code NFC at checkout for 20% off on all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
That's a lot of, that is that surveillance that you were talking about, dude.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, I'm just trying to figure out how you put 35 trail cameras on 200 acres. Let's do the math here, right? Let's do, okay, here it is. So 220. He had 220 acres divided by 35. Dude, that's, is this correct? That's 6 trail cameras per acre?
6 acres per trail camera.
Sir, 6 acres per trail camera. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But factor in there that you've got, I mean, not all of that 220 is going to be like huntable primo ground. Like, so like, what's one the concentration giant, yeah, of all that? You know what I mean? Like, cause there's right, got to be areas where you've probably got like 4 or 5 cameras per acre, yeah, on that's, certain parts of that farm. That's wild.
Yeah.
You reach a point there where it's like, you know, paralysis by analysis, I would imagine, yeah, where you, yeah, start sitting there and it's like, okay, I checked that camera. Now I need to check this camera and that camera to make sure that he actually did take that trail. Or like 2 days ago, he showed up on these two, but then he missed the third one and went straight to the fifth one. Like, what, yeah, the hell did he do there?
What happened, like, there? Must have been a hot doe pulled him off, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, right,
You're just calculating instead, mm-hmm, of hunting at that, yeah, point. I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know.
There's too much variability,
yeah,
across the board. Like, we all know that, to try and fill in that gap. And I don't, yeah, know, hopefully people realize that as we go forward here, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Whatever.
How do you use trail cameras? Like, are you just basically like inventory purposes only?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I pair it up with some mock scrapes that I create, sure, as well. And that tells me a lot, especially in September when they go hard horn. But outside of that, like, I have a couple, I have some cell cameras in some pinch points.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my main property that I've hunted the longest, the river bottom ground doesn't have cell capabilities.
Sure.
So everything has to be on top, which doesn't tell me too much, right? It's just like, oh, a doe brought them by, or, I try to just put them on doe groups. And then, yep, if the bucks start looking like they're following them, then I'll get in or something like that. But for the most part, it's difficult to, it's difficult on the river bottom ground. Now, on the other property that I hunt, my cell cameras are just like on a, let's see, I got 2 on mock scrapes throughout the property. I have 1 on a fence post on that points at a 2-track. So I know who comes in and out of the property. And then outside of that, I have 1 in a pinch point on a creek crossing. Further up about 200 yards, I'd say closer to 200. I have another cell cam on a creek crossing. And then, I have another one on a mock scrape. So that's 2 on a mock scrape. And then I have 1 more kind of pointing in into an open area, into a bedding area where deer kind of just kind of cruise by in and out all day. And so I don't even know how many that is.
Well, I was going to say, what's your cameras per acre there?
I think it's 7 on 240 acres.
Gotcha.
But yeah, you have to remember, like you said, of that 240 acres, we're sitting at 80 of it. No, not even 80 of it. Well, 80 of it would be CRP and timber, like a fingered timber. There's not a ton, yep, of timber in it. So right, more CRP. Sure. And so it's all honed down. It's not like I have a trail camera in the middle of an ag field.
Right.
I just have it right there. So
how do you like running cameras on creek crossings? And like, I guess, what intel have you found? Cause I've never run one on a crossing. I've always thought about doing it.
Yeah.
I've always thought about hunting one. I've never put a camera nor hunted a creek crossing.
Yeah, dude, it's great. I mean, like I said, and this goes back to my strategy that we've talked about in the past. And that is, I hunt doe groups.
So I'm trying to find where the consistent movement from these doe groups are.
Yep.
And then I know, okay, these does go through here all the time. Now I need to find a way to put my stand or myself in a position where I can let the does go by me. And hopefully at some point there's going to be bucks in this area following them or hitting a scrape or whatever in order to get, try to get this, chase these does. And sure. it happened last year. I just blew the shot. And then I killed a couple days later, I killed a different buck, but yeah, dude, it's just finding the pinch points that the does use and just putting a lot of eggs into that basket in the best time of year to where the bucks are going to just want to go where I hunt the bucks when the bucks are ready to breed, but the does are not.
Yeah.
That's in the simplest way possible. That's how I hunt. What about you? Do you use cams at all?
Yeah. Most of just for inventory purposes. So I'll run them on a couple of public pieces, like mostly just like hub scrapes, or like big community scrapes on this one river bottom piece. River bottom piece is totally flat though. So it's like basically you've got several hundred yards of hot and cold scrape lines, but there's two just hammer scrapes in there that get hit consistently. I hadn't run a camera on one of those before last year. And so like, I just happened to get lucky on the hike out on a early October hunt. The wood nettles on this piece get super, super tall and thick. And so the only thing I could really do was follow a deer trail out. Yeah. And I was doing that after dark, and it was actually kind of perfect, 'cause I could see this super dark shadowy trail cut through the nettles, and I just hopped on it and followed it, and ended up leading me just kind of by happenstance to this big massive scrape. And so I threw a camera on there and gained a bunch of good intel on that and learned a lot more, put a big piece of the puzzle. Unfortunately, I hunted it like twice last year, but put a big piece of the puzzle together on that property. And aside from that, just ran one on a hub scrape down in Iowa here, but then ended up killing my buck on a property that had no cameras on it. So
nice. What's the, like, I don't even know. what are the cell camera rules on public land in Iowa and Wisconsin now?
I think Wisconsin, you just have to put your DNR number on it. In Iowa, I don't know that you have to do anything. I think you just,
because there was a while there where they're just like, hey, you got to do this, or you can't hunt with cell cams, or you got to hunt with them in sight. But then when I would call and talk to a DNR officer, they're just like, we don't know.
Yep.
Right. We don't know what the rule is. And so I don't even know, like it sucked there for a while, 'cause you don't even know what the, what the rules are.
Right.
And so I was kind of worried even on private ground where at one point last year, they're just like, well, you can't have cell cameras, to aid in the killing of a deer or wildlife. But what does that mean?
Right.
Does that mean the same day? Does that mean a month in advance? Does that mean like the intel that I gained in July from this cellular camera outside of the season helped me make a decision to get in there in November, and then I kill this buck? Is that what they mean? And so there's just like a ton of gray area right now, especially in Iowa, that I'm just like, what is going on?
Right.
And it kind of cripples the public land guy if they're at all concerned about it. 'Cause I'm just like, hey, like, how do you use these now? Well, we don't know what we're doing. Or the message hasn't gotten out, and they've just been using them like they've used them because nobody really knows the answers.
Yep.
So,
yeah, dude, I think if Iowa were to implement some sort of a ban on cell cams, I still think that, like you just said, there'd be that buffer period of probably 2 years, maybe 3 years, where it said, like, you know, people are like, oh, well, I didn't know that you couldn't use a cell cam. My bad. Yeah. Or they'd be using one like, well, yeah, but I don't have reception, so I'm only using it as a SD camera just because it gets better resolution or something. And I don't know. I think there'd be a lot of gray area there. Like, would the DNR have to go and like put signs out at the access points of each lot or whatever, saying like, hey, no cell cameras permitted on this property or whatever. But like you said, what does the gray area in there of just that verbiage of what does using them to harvest an animal actually mean? Because it's, like you said, if I get a picture of them in September, I don't hunt it till November. And I wouldn't have otherwise hunted that property had I not gotten a picture of that deer in September. Like, does that count as it? Or does it have to be something immediate? Like, oh, he showed up in this bedding area. I got out of my car and like ran in there and then shot him an hour later.
Well, I was always been kind of gray in certain rules and regs, especially when it comes to like mineral sites, right?
Sure.
Like, or baiting sites or whatever. In Nebraska, they say 200 yards, black and white. You can't have a tree stand 200 yards from a mineral site or a bait station. Cool, dude. That's awesome. However, in Iowa, it's like you can't bait and you can't you can have mineral. You can even bait, or you can feed deer.
Yep.
But you just can't hunt over top of it. Well, what does that mean? Am I 200 yards away safe? I've heard guys getting written up for something like that, where they had a mineral site and the trail led to their tree stand and it was like 400 yards away. And the guy's like, well, you kind of cut off the deer movement here. And he's like, Jesus, it's 400 yards away. Like, what do you want me to do on a smaller piece of property? I don't know. It'd be nice if there was way, like, and that goes across all states, just like, you cannot do this, or you can do this, or you cannot use cell cams, or you can use cell cams. Like, just tell us what we can and can't do. And I think people would respect that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Do you think if Iowa does away with cell cams, like, what do you think that's going to do in general?
Yeah.
In general, what do you think that's going to do for hunting? Nothing.
Dude, imagine running cellular trail cameras on your farm for 4 or 5 years now. Okay. And then the state comes in and goes, you can't run cell cameras on your private property anymore. People would shit. They would throw a fit telling, especially in Iowa, like, we're all private ground. Right. And now you're going to come in and tell me what I can and cannot do.
Yep.
And then people would say, oh, well, I'm monitoring my livestock with this. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, of course, the DNR does not have enough resources to, like, how are you going to implement that?
Right.
Like, how are you going to, what's the word I'm looking for?
Enforce it.
Enforce it. Yes.
Yeah.
How are you going to enforce it? You can't. Right. On public land, maybe you can. You'd have to have a lot of hunters rat out other hunters.
Right.
Right. Using cell cams. And so it's just like, I feel like if you're on private ground, you should be able to do what you want with kind of the cell cam. Mm-hmm. But then I'll talk out of the other side of my mouth and say the same thing about like crossbows, right? Do you feel like in the state, like on your own property, you should be able to use whatever weapon you want whenever you want to use it? It's still a state regulated season, state regulated tag and take, you know, like that kind of stuff. So I don't know, man. Just tell us what we can and can't do, man. I almost like, I don't even want to lobby for any rules. I just want them to be like, okay, no cell cameras on public, or no, like, tell us no cell cameras to aid in the take of wild game. Right. That would mean like, then that would mean what, 24 hours? You would need to put some type of stipulation on it, so we know. 'Cause if I get something 24 hours in advance, like I got something at 4 p.m. You walk through this little pinch point. The next night, I'm going to try to be there at 4 p.m. to try to intercept this buck if he comes through that same pinch again. What's going on? Can I shoot this now? Or are we past that limit? Is there a limit? So I don't know. We'll see. We will see what happens, my friend. I do want to do some commercials real quick, but then I got a question about kind of how you pick your spots. But Wasp Archery. We'll start at Wasp. Dude, these guys are, they're even making like, I just read recently that they're making like old school runs of some of their older school broadheads. I've recently heard that there are guys now, it's kind of like a fad in the archery space where they're pulling bows or they're looking for bows from like the 80s.
Yep.
And they're putting together like old school tackle where it's just like, old, like throwback bows, throwback arrows with throwback heads and vanes and stuff like that. And they're maybe even using fingers to like the finger grips on them and things like that. And so there's like this small fad that's happening right now where guys are using old school gear and old school camo to go out and try to kill today's deer, which I think is pretty fucking sweet, to be honest with you.
Dude, I love that trend. Absolutely. Yeah.
So Wasp Archery, I think, is kind of heard about that trend, and they've done a limited run of some of their old school broadheads for people to consume. And so to go and get to if they want to do something like that. And I think that's pretty sweet. So go check out wasparchery.com. They got mechanicals, they got fixed blades, whatever your cup of tea is, they have it. Discount code NFC20 for 20% off wasparchery.com. Next on the list is Vortex Optics. Do you have a red dot on your turkey shotgun?
I do not. No. Nope.
You do not. You're old school. No. Are you going to keep it old school or are you going to ever red dot it out?
I thought about the red dot for a while going into this season and then just didn't get around to it. I would like to try it for sure.
Yeah. It's pretty convenient. I shot a turkey a couple years ago with a red dot on and it's just like, it's pretty sweet, dude. It's like you don't have to guess thinking how far is this deer or this turkey. Just put the red dot on his face and then splatter it. So, I don't know if that's cool to say, but that's what you do when a turkey takes an entire load, to the face. Anyway, that's just, I got to stop because it's everything I say keeps getting worse at this point. So, vortexoptics.com. They have the range finders. They have the spotting scopes, the binoculars, the red dots, the anything you need. Anything you need for optics, they have it. VortexOptics.com. Next on the list is Code Blue Sense. We've already kind of talked about my mock scrapes and how I use them. Real and synthetic deer urines. They got scent elimination products like field sprays and laundry detergents. So go check out CodeBlueSense.com. Discount code NFC20 for 20% off. We've talked about Reveal trail cameras now. And as far as that's kind of, I pair my mock scrape with my Reveal trail camera. That helps me get an inventory in areas that I don't want a mineral site. Because if I put a mineral site in somewhere, someplace, I can't hunt close to that. That's the rule. But if I put a mock scrape in there, I can hunt as close to that mock scrape as I want. And it works really well, especially when velvet comes off and deer are kind of jockeying for position, marking their territories. Even like the does come to investigate it as well. And so I absolutely love running mock scrapes and pairing them with a Reveal trail camera. They've made updates to their app. So go check that out. Make sure you have the latest version and they have some new new trail cameras and some cool things with how their energy is working. It's I'm not supposed to say I want to, but I'm not supposed to, so I'll just wait. Really cool coming out of Reveal. So go check that out. Tacticam.com/cameras. And then lastly, my company, Full Sneak Gear. If we got plenty of t-shirts left. So, and sweatshirts. If you need a workout tee, if you need a date night tee, if you need, just like I'm going to go scout tee or plant food plots tee, we got it. So, fullsneakgear.com. All right.
Bust out that Slayer tee for date night.
Slayer tee. Do you have a Slayer tee?
I do not, no.
I'm going to get you a Slayer tee. So the next time that you and your girl go out for a nice dinner, I'm going to give you the zombie deer t-shirt. What would she say? What would your girlfriend say if you wore the zombie Slayer tee whitetail shirt? What would she say?
Dude, she'd just laugh.
Yeah.
She'd be like, what the fuck are you wearing?
What are you wearing? This is the most badass tee. I'm trying to be badass for you, sweetie.
Yep, exactly. Gotta look alpha.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right. The question I had for you is this past year, was it this year or was it this past year? You put a lot of time and energy scouting on a particular piece of public
That was last year. That would have been 24.
Okay, 24. So roughly 2 years ago.
Yep.
Right?
2 years ago.
And you found some kick-ass spots, and you even found some kick-ass deer on these spots. Yep. I walk through the process with me of how you located these spots, because I feel like that's something I don't necessarily talk a lot about, is locating locating the spots once you're in there.
For sure. Dude, it was really kind of my first foray into scouting super, super hard and not really worrying, as not being as concerned with like, oh, I don't want to screw this spot up, and more concerned with I need answers now so that I can make an informed decision going forward here. Luckily, this piece on the river bottom gets a bunch of duck hunting pressure. And so that was like a big influence into like why I think I could get away with that stuff, is just because there were people in and out of there. There were boats. There were, you know, guys toting in decoys and shotguns and making all sorts of noise, to a point where it's like the deer were kind of just desensitized to it. Obviously, there were areas on this piece where deer kind of had their safe zone, because most of the hunters would go kind of to the fringes along the water rather than going deep in there. But with it being deep in there and having enough of these little sloughs and little pockets and stuff like that intermixed in this piece, there was really nowhere that was like off limits from a duck hunter. Just places that people were too lazy to walk into or didn't want to walk into or weren't the best duck holes. But regardless, like the deer were pretty desensitized to a lot of these just human pressure for the most part, and to this point where like the first time I was in there was actually on a duck hunt, and I just brought a cell cam with me and figured I'd slap it outside of this willow thicket where I'd kicked a deer out of there the year before, and I was like, I just want to see if there's something in here. I'm just curious. But I mean, I scouted the whole thing in my waders, so I don't know if like I don't know if that like carried any influence. I don't think it did, but I mean, from my standpoint, it's like this guy's not even trying to conceal his scent. Like he's just tromping around, and the deer, you know, just don't seem to care. But got in there, threw a camera just on this bedding area on a heavy trail going out of this thing. And about 5-6 days later, I got a picture of an absolute hammer. And so at that point, I was like, oh shit, there is a deer in here that I actually want to chase. And then from there, it was kind of, okay, here's the trail it was on. I haven't gone beyond this bedding point. Let's figure out where this trail leads. And so I followed that trail in, and then eventually kind of just picked apart this whole place and just did big loops and everything. And then threw a couple of, brought another camera with me, found a, whatever the next furthest south, big scrape was, like the community scrape outside the next bedding area, and threw a camera on that, then kind of tried to connect the dots between that one and, or that camera and the next camera, just to see if there's any overlap in terms of like, okay, this is like when or how they, these deer tend to filter from one end of this piece to the other end of this piece. Cause basically one end of this piece is water and the other end of it's, well, more water, but there's a cornfield just off to the side of it, and trying to figure out where deer were going from the, I guess like the ag land to where they drop down into this river bottom, because they would flood, you know, in the springtime and everything, and then dry out and all that. And again, plenty of duck pressure all throughout there. So it's kind of trying to figure out like where in the midst of all this pressure are these deer crossing. Obviously they're doing it like at night so that they're not going to be, you know, crossing paths with these duck hunters or anything like that. Or maybe they're just doing it, you know, midday or later once those hunters are out, because you can hear the motors and hear guys going in and out. But for the most part, it was get in there, throw sits around that southern bedding area so that I could get eyes on deer and kind of figure out, okay, where does it seem like the most movement is? And then from there, dive in after that hunt. Usually it was like go in the morning, set up, observe, tear down by like 10 o'clock, do a quick loop if I had questions on something, and then walk back out, you know, in whatever way I came in and everything. But yeah, just kind of using whatever direction like the wind kind of allowed me to go in. Like if I had anything out of the west, it was a much longer walk than it was with a slightly east drifting wind. I could just run right down the border. Anything in the west, I had to dive in, do a big loop down around everything, which was good because then I could scout while I was doing that. And so in doing that, I kind of just honed in on this deer, basically following his track through all these different crossings and slowly just, it was like a big throw, like gather all the information you possibly can and then strip it down. Whereas now I feel like I've gotten to a point where I'm a little bit more efficient in that. Like I put so many miles scouting that piece into that season and got a crack at that buck. But nowadays I think I'm a little bit more efficient in that and kind of just refined and not knowing sort of, okay, a deer would live here or I can efficiently hunt this spot. But a big part of that too was like I scouted every square inch of that dang piece and I know kind of.
When did that scouting take place? Like what date?
Dude, it was October 27th through November, what was it, 13th, I think.
Okay. Okay.
14th, I think, was when I got a shot at him.
All right. So this was in-season scouting.
Oh,
at
yeah.
this point.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So you didn't have all of like the June, July vegetation on the tree, right?
No.
Okay. So that duck hunting pressure
yep.
that was around. I've hunted public before or private that is right next to public that is duck hunter central.
Yep.
And almost... like, obviously, they're not going to let you walk right on top of them.
Yep.
But the second that they start unloading, boom, 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 boom at the ducks, these deer don't even, they're not fazed by it.
No.
And we're talking like 200 yards, maybe 300 yards. And I've been in a tree stand where I got more shocked at all of the shots coming out of this, this swamp than I was kind of, I was north and my scent was kind of blowing down into this swamp. And I was like, it was one of those scenarios where my access air was good, but if anything got downwind to me, I was going to have to shoot it.
Yep.
Like the trail came downwind to me, but I was kind of angling my wind, quartering my wind. And so I either had to shoot it or it was going to bust me.
Yep.
Right. And so I had a doe group that kind of was milling around in the area and those guns started going off and they didn't even lift their heads, dude. And it was crazy. And so there's got to be something to it. I don't know what it is, but there's got to be something where all that noise, all that, they know that you're not a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a really good strategy for someone who is actually a threat.
Yeah.
You know,
dude, that is why I could scout as much as I did. It's because there was so much duck hunting pressure and they were so used to human scent all over the place.
Not being,
being
quiet.
Downwind of. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Stomping in there and all that shit. And then they're just like, okay, well, I might stand up and relocate just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were going in there to hunt, were you trying to be quiet? Were you trying to avoid or were you just beelining it? I know you talked about looping around and stuff, but were you quiet?
I'd be as quiet as I could. Like if I wasn't, you know, if I could avoid snapping a big dry stick in the bottom, I would. But also the nice thing with duck hunters is they've all got headlamps and floodlights and all that stuff. So I would just blend in with them and I'd throw, you know, kick on my flashlight so I could kind of see where I was going. And that sped up my access significantly. I think I bumped maybe three deer the entire time and they were like yearling bucks or does, or it was a small buck as I was on my way out or something in the evening. The evening they were a lot more sensitive because they were like, wait a minute, like you're supposed to be in here in the morning, not right now as it's getting dark. Like what's going on here?
Yeah.
But for the most part, I mean, and the thing with duck hunters too, is like they won't tell you shit about their duck hunting spots, but they are more than happy to tell you about what deer they saw or that big buck that's been running around behind their blind that they've seen 3 days this week and all that. Cause they just, if you get the ones that don't really care, they're only going to hunt during gun season.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
Nice. All right. So talk to me a little bit about this buck that showed up and Cause a lot of times that buck shows up and now you really have to think about the strategy, where he's at, where he's going. Cause I think, didn't he, correct me if I'm wrong, but you located him, then you lost him, but then you hunted and then you kind of saw the area he was working.
Yeah.
Is that accurate? Walk us through that.
Yeah. So basically, I got a couple trail cam pictures on this like northern bedding area. Followed that, you know, scouted off of that, mm-hmm. gathered more intel, hunted that area first. And then after I didn't have a couple of encounters, then got the heck out of there, figured, you know what, I need to figure out what else is going on here. So I started doing that. And like I said, a lot of observation sits, but like intentional ones, like an observation sit where I could see quite a bit of that bedding area, but also I had a scrape or the major trail right over me, and trying to just sort of very, very slowly kind of stage hunt my way in. And that was honestly what inevitably led to confirmation after we had a hot doe. One of the craziest rut hunts I've ever had. We had a hot doe come running down out of this like northern section of this piece here.
Yeah.
She had a spike, a forky, a broken rack basket eight, a full racked basket eight, and probably a 150 inch 10 pointer, all running single file, hauling ass while she just ran for her life from what I'm assuming that northern bedding area was,
yeah,
all the way down through this river bottom, and then eventually dove into the thicket where I was suspecting that my target buck was living in.
Yeah.
They all dive in. I hear a bunch of brush crashing and stuff, bunch of different tones of grunts. And then all of a sudden there's a new one that's significantly deeper than any of the other ones. She yeah. comes shooting out. Same trail of bucks. We got, you know, spike, forky, broken, full basket, 10.
Yeah.
And then in tow at the very end, after those guys all left, out walks my target buck, which is this big symmetrical 12 with split G2s. And he comes out, all of them start hauling ass, running around. They jump over to kind of this other thicket, and I'm watching them, and I tore down at that point. I didn't tear down. I left my stand in the tree, but I was like, if that doe is over there and all these bucks are running around, it's like somebody just kicked a hornet's nest. Like, mm-hmm. That's where I need to be, because if she's not going to come back this way, and luckily I did get over there, because she bedded down on the backside of like a high bank under a deadfall, and it wasn't until I walked, because I was trying to get on the downwind side of them, but she was literally as far downwind as she could possibly be from any of these bucks. Like, no buck was going to see her, and I just happened to walk by this deadfall and spooked her, and then she jumped up, ran back up the bank, and then ran back through that thicket over to the other one, which then grabbed all those other bucks, and then they caught a whiff of her and then chased her back the other way. But I chased that 150. I almost got a crack stalking that deer, because he would walk this edge, he'd run in, and then he'd jump back out, and he had his nose down, looked like a bird dog looking for this doe, and he would do that every like 30 yards. It was the weirdest thing, like almost 30 yards on the nuts every single time. And so I figured, okay, this next time when he jumps in, I'm going to sprint up to this next little deadfall here, and I'm going to try and shoot him from my knees. And then when I got up there, saw a little movement out of my, you know, peripheral vision off mm-hmm. to my right. That doe shot out of there, and then that buck shot out right behind her. And so I never got a crack at her. But that confirmed through all of that, that my target buck had been living in that southern bedding area there. And it was just a matter of, okay, when's he actually going to get up? When does yeah. he stretch his legs? When does he do all that kind of stuff? And
yeah.
that was what inevitably led me to actually get a shot at there, where that buck was, you know, leaving that spot and then pushing in another 150 yards the next evening, I think it was.
Yeah.
Didn't get a shot at him then, but then also got like, you know, in that afternoon window where you can see everything on the ground in full daylight. You're not doing it in gray light yeah. or anything like that. Got a, you know, picked out a tree, set up, forgot my stand that night actually, or the straps for my stand. And so I was basically saddle hunting off my top stick, and then threw a stand in there the next morning. And then that was when I got a crack at him.
Yeah. And no go for, you got a crack at him, but no go.
Dude, he bedded like 45 yards in front of me, and all I could see was the tips of his tines, and he was in this big, I don't know what the heck it was, this big bush. And I was set up on a pretty open, heavily used trail that I thought he was going to come down.
Yeah.
He came out of this bedding area and bedded just right underneath that bush. And after about 45 minutes of watching him bedded there, this little 2-year-old comes down the trail, and my target buck stood up, turned towards him, tilted his rack down, and just bulldozed this bush. Like literally like crushed it, folded the thing over and blew through it. So he's got vines and branches and shit hanging off of his tines and everything. Mm-hmm. And opened up a scrape right there. And he was at like 39 yards right then, but he didn't have a good angle or anything. I had stuff in between he and I. So I ranged him, and then I ranged the trail that that little buck went on. There was a deadfall that was at like 37 or something. And so he keeps going. I set my pin for 40. And I'm like, all right, that should be good. I don't like this shot at all, but this is the biggest buck I've ever had the opportunity to chase. Like, I'm not going to not sling an arrow at him. And I murped him. He froze so intently and snapped right back at me that I was too scared to move, frankly. And so then I had my bow on my lap, didn't want to draw. And then he turned his head, and then I drew and I murped him again. He snapped his head back, settled my pin. And I thought, because I'd murped him twice and he was so on edge, I was like, he's going to hear my bow. He's going to drop and I'm going to jump the string or whatever. So I aimed low and, or like, you know, kind of like right behind the shoulder there, right for the heart, and shot. My arrow just arced perfectly towards it and then zipped right underneath him. He didn't move a muscle, and I just shaved his belly and, cracked a tree behind him, and off he went.
And damn, dude. And never saw him again. Never.
Nope, never.
Okay. So let me ask you this question. What did you learn from that whole thing, from the moment that you walked in there and said, okay, this is a good spot, to drawing back and shanking on that buck? You know, not necessarily about the shot itself, but like, what made that spot good, do you feel like, that where the deer were comfortable in there? Because really, ultimately, that's what we're trying to find, places where deer feel comfortable.
Yeah. Well, dude, it was like, kind of like we talked about, I think it was 2 weeks ago, you find those areas where like the honey hole, right, is where those deer finally slow down and they just act normal and they relax a little bit. And you spook them and they're like, what the actual hell are you doing back here? Mm-hmm. He's like, they're not even like terrified. They're more just like, dude, what? Like, you're not supposed to be here.
I've never seen you here before. Yep.
Like, leave. And then they kind of like almost like reluctantly leave that area. You know what I mean? And so I bumped a couple does doing that. But you know, especially during the rut there, it was like that area where, I mean, it held a bunch of does and a bunch of does. They maybe didn't bed in that thicket, but they bedded all down in that surrounding area. And so a buck could live in that thicket where he's going to be the most secure and hear everything around him. But also, if he wants to go cruise for does, he can get up very easily and go, you know, cruise for a dozen or more does that are within 200 yards of him very easily without any human interference. And so it's just kind of a nice blend of plenty of good bedding cover where that buck can monitor everything, plenty of does, and also just the only way they had to go was north or south on this piece. And
Is this a spot that is now kind of like a high priority spot for you moving into this upcoming season?
I think so, because even last year I threw a camera on the same area that I had all the pictures of that buck and didn't have a single picture. Like, I had like two, maybe three pictures of like, you know, dinky bucks and stuff like that. So I don't know if that scrape just didn't open up. The scrape that I found by accident in the dark that I mentioned earlier, like that one was a big producer, and I actually threw a sit at that scrape November 9th or 10th or something like that. And as I was about to pick a tree, my target buck ended up just cruising in through there at like 3:30, and it was so unbelievably dry in there that the leaves, I shifted my foot just a tiny bit and it just went, and that buck just locked up, froze, stared right at me, and off he went. So I never got a crack at him, but I think this year, I'm definitely going to try and throw a couple more sits in that area.
Yeah. And then once you had that encounter where the deer was he busted out of there, he wasn't there anymore, and you said that, you know, it was just some dink bucks, did you give up on that piece and go somewhere else, or did you come back and hunt it later?
I went back and hunted it later, threw a couple like gun season sits at it and everything, just to see, and especially because like gun season, we can obviously be a little bit more mobile and still hunt better than we can with a bow. And so that's usually kind of like, if I screw up an area or have too many unanswered questions right before gun season opens, mm-hmm. usually I'll just save it for then and hope that I didn't bugger it up. Now, maybe that's only because the year prior when I took a crack at that target buck and I missed him, and that was the last time I ever saw him, ever had any intel of him. And I think he just like left that piece or whatever, because for whatever reason, maybe he just, the food ran out, because that was a big part of it too. It got pretty cold and then all the nettles and everything died down there, and there was really no horizontal cover anymore at that point to kind of keep them concealed. So I think it just kind of dries out, but I don't know. That's the fun of like figuring out the nuances of each property. Right. And like learning them. Yep. After this happens, then they're usually out of there and all that.
So based on how you hunt, has there been any more pieces, whether that's Wisconsin or Iowa or the scouting that you've done in the last year that you've kind of located and you're interested in hunting?
Yeah, dude, there's that one piece of public that you and I talked about. Mm-hmm. I think I showed you on Onyx after we were done recording or whatever. Yeah. That is kind of at the forefront of my mind just because it would be such a cool piece to pull the deer out of.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know, kind of like we talked about, like how you kill it and like the story behind a deer. I don't care what deer it is. I just like the story of, I canoed in there, I did this, and you just make it the most like full and like, I don't know, outdoors.
Jeremiah Johnson type shit. Yeah.
Dude, just fully every aspect of it is there. You know, you got the adventure aspect, the, you know, fording the river and you know, filling your boots or whatever.
It would be cool to tell a story so cool. You know, like some of these guys who they go and they pack an elk out or they're at 14,000 feet hunting mule deer, you know, some crazy shit like that. And then you tell the story so well that it makes the person that you're telling it to feel insignificant in anything they've ever done in life. Like, I canoed in, you know, had to then walk like a mile and then, you know, I shot him and then I had to drag him back to the canoe and then there's a flash flood or, you know, some crazy shit like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And it's and all this additional work. Yeah. All this additional work that goes into the harvest that all these other people are just like, dude, that's impressive. Like that's impressive. Cause only because you're working harder than them. Right.
Yep.
So yeah,
definitely.
Yep. Absolutely. Dude, great conversation today. Great little BS session. I don't even know really if there was a sustained topic, but we talked about your scouting methods and we talked a little bit about locating deer and then setting up on them. But cool story.
Hunt culture. Yeah.
Hunting culture. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for sticking with us while we do another spring session episode. We're going to have a couple more of these. I don't even know. We're going to try to go through the rest of this month for sure. I don't know how far into June we're going to get, but outside of that, good vibes, everybody. Make sure you go to Spotify or iTunes, wherever you download the Nine Finger Chronicles or the Wisconsin Sportsman podcast, and give it a 5-star review, subscribe to it. Also, the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast is on YouTube. So if you want to see how gorgeous I am, you can go watch it there as well. Good vibes, everybody. Have a good day, and we'll talk to you next time.